Hello everybody, this is Dr. Weber. We're going to be talking about understanding nutrition, food, energy, and carbohydrate requirements. We're going to first talk about the at-water energy values for each macronutrient. Then we'll talk about food concepts such as the coefficient of digestibility and the thermic effect of food. We'll understand the dietary reference intake values. We'll talk about the different carbohydrates and their impact on health and performance. We'll talk about how sugary and processed carbohydrates create metabolic disruption. We'll understand the concept of glycemic index loading response, understand proper meal timing to optimize blood sugar regulation. We'll identify the impact of inadequate carbohydrate on health, protein sparing, and performance. And we'll identify appropriate carbohydrates intake based on activity levels. So, energy. The first scientific law of thermodynamics, known as the law of conservation of energy, states that energy cannot be created nor destroyed. When humans eat plants or animals that consume plants, the energy transfers from one organism to another. Okay? In most cases, human energy originates with plants, which derive this power from sunlight, water, and carbon dioxide in the process of photosynthesis. Okay? The energy conveyed through food represents a form of heat energy measured by a unit called a calorie. A calorie represents the amount of heat required to raise the temperature of 1 gram of water, 1 degree Celsius. So we have calories in the form of chemicals or carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. And the body uses ATP or energy to metabolize the food to create energy. This energy creates chemical waste in the form of carbohydrate or in the form of carbon dioxide and water through heat. So energy conversions in humans is we eat plants. Plants come from the sun, or we eat animals that eat plants. So regardless of where we get our food from, it ultimately derives from the sun, which gives the plant food, which gives the animal food or the human food. We break it down. This is currency, calories in, calories out, and then in the form of carbon dioxide, water, and chemical waste is what is left. The coefficients of digestibility, plant-based fiber, lean proteins. So the net energy of food is also affected by the digestion absorption process, referred to as the coefficient of digestibility. The coefficient of digestibility reflects the total energy the body has available from the food it consumes. Certain components of food are indigestible and past body absorption, adding to excrement. Fibrous foods affect this rate, reducing digestibility by as much as 5 to 10%. The fiber cannot be broken down, which promotes increased mobility through the intestines, thus reducing absorption time. Plant proteins seem to yield the lowest digestibility coefficient, whereas animal products seem to yield the highest measured levels. In general, the body absorbs 90% of carbohydrate, 95% of lipid, and 92% of protein energy for fuel. Okay. Nutrients are divided into two categories, each with separate classes. The energy yielding category includes carbohydrates, proteins, and lipids. The non-energy yielding category includes vitamins, minerals, and water. Okay. Thermic effect of food. Fiber, lean protein, up to 10% of the thermic effect of food. So the thermic effect of food is basically high fibrous or tough foods like lean protein that can't be broken down, and they take up to 10% of your calorie for the day, your calorie outtake. So you actually use calories to burn the food up, such as lean proteins and high fiber. So 10% of your overall calories that you burn comes from the thermic effect of food. There are energy-yielding nutrients, like we just talked about, and non-energy-yielding nutrients, carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. These are what food is made out of. And inside of the food, we have vitamins, we have minerals, and there is water. Those have no calories in those. The Atwater energy value, so carbohydrates, they have 4 calories per gram. So if you had a 20 carbohydrate gram banana, that would be 80 calories from carbohydrates. You have protein, which is 4 calories per gram. You have fats, which is 9 calories per gram. So if you have 10 grams of fat, that's 90 calories. Alcohol, 7 calories per gram. That's a little bit higher. So alcohol has more calories than carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. It's something to take note of. Dietary energy sufficiency. Factors that affect dietary sufficiency include food and nutrient timing, food quantity and type, variations in nutrient digestion, absorption, and assimilation, individual requirement for energy based on physical factors, age, sex, physical activity, and other influences such as dietary practices, preferences, and risk of food allergies. Dietary reference intake values, so the EAR, this intake estimated to meet 50% of needs for healthy people in a group. You have RDA, intake sufficient to meet 97 to 98% of healthy people in a group. AI, recommended average daily intake in a group. And UL, highest intake, which poses no risk of adverse effects of or toxicity. You have carbohydrates. There are 3 different types. You have monosaccharides, disaccharides, and polysaccharides. You have your monosaccharides, which is your fructose, galactose, and glucose. You have disaccharides, lactose, maltose, sucrose, and trehalose. And you have polysaccharides, which is cellulose, glycogen, and starch. Okay. Monosaccharides are the most basic form of carbohydrate, representing a single sugar component. Variations between monosaccharides are based on their carbon to hydrogen to oxygen sequence. These differences in sequence determine a carbohydrate's biochemical characteristics. For example, glucose and galactose are monosaccharides with the same number of carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen atoms. However, they are arranged differently, which causes them to behave and taste slightly different. Disaccharides, as their name implies, are formed by the joining of 2 separate monosaccharides. Lactose, for instance, is a disaccharide which features a combined glucose and galactose molecule. Both monosaccharide and disaccharides are referred to as simple sugars because they are easily digestible and require little manipulation by the cell for energy use. So this would have a low thermic effect of food. Finally, polysaccharides are chains of monosaccharides linked together in sequences from as few as 3 sugars to as many as several thousand. As the chains of monosaccharide sugars increase in length and diversity, the nutrient complexity increases. Polysaccharides are more commonly referred to as complex carbohydrates and have chain linkages of tens to thousands of monosaccharide residues. These complex chains are classified as either plant or animal polysaccharides depending on their source. You have glycogen and starch. They are 2 common forms of polysaccharides in our diet. Glycogen is the storage form of carbohydrate in animal tissue, while starch is the term used for the storage form of carbohydrates in plants. Starch is the larger component in seeds, corns, potatoes, beans, and the various grains that make up common foods like pasta, bread, and cereals. Plant starch remains the most important source of carbohydrates for most Americans, accounting for more than 50% of the total carbohydrates consumed. This number has decreased by 30% since the turn of the century, when starches comprised about 80% of carbohydrate sources. This significant decline has been met by an equally significant increase in simple sugar consumption. Fiber. Vital to digestive health, disease prevention, and weight management. Less than 2 kcal a gram, RDA equals 20 to 35 grams per day, and they're soluble versus insoluble. So fiber adds bulk or satiety. It's a low glycemic index. It slows absorption, increases intestinal mobilization, and increases the thermic effect of food, and it decreases circulating cholesterol and triglycerides. So fiber can decrease your bad cholesterol. It can increase your metabolism. It can increase intestinal mobilization, which gets gook out of the intestines, good for cancers of the colon. lowers your glycemic index. So high fiber diets are really good for people with diabetes, and it adds bulk or satiety, so you actually feel full, so you don't get hungry again and eat more calories. Fiber is a non-starch polysaccharide classified as a carbohydrate. Cellulose is its most common form in the diet, which represents the most abundant organic molecule found on Earth. Cellulose resists enzymatic breakdown in the intestines, making it indigestible by humans except for a small portion that can be fermented by intestinal gut bacteria. Fiber is commonly categorized as either soluble or insoluble. The bacterial breakdown of fiber generally contributes less than 2,000 calories per gram, making an excellent addition to calorie-controlled diets, not only for its low caloric density, but also for its positive effect on blood sugar regulation metabolism. Its consumption is linked with lower occurrence of several Western diseases, including obesity, diabetes, hypertension, intestinal disorders, some cancers, and heart disease. In fact, fiber is a key component to support plant-based diets for disease prevention and anti-inflammation. Most Americans consume about 16 grams, the recommended 20 to 35 grams of fiber per day, predisposing consumers to an elevated disease risk. In less industrialized nations, the fiber content of the average diet is higher due to plant consumption, as protein is very expensive. Worldwide, however, dietary intake is well below the recommended intake levels. Additionally, the foods associated with high fiber diet often support health by being lower in calories and more nutrient rich, particularly with phytochemicals. For this reason, the source of fiber is very important, and consideration should be given to fiber consumed through food sources rather than supplements. As addressed previously, whole grain products, fruits, legumes, and leafy green vegetables exemplify foods high in fiber. Sugar, the metabolic disruptor. Average American consumes 25% of total kilocalories from sugar. The goal is less than 10% of your total calories from sugar. Estimated U.S. consumption is more than 100 pounds of sugar per year per person. Associated with obesity, metabolic disease, systematic inflammation, diabetes, cortisol, hyperlipidemia, that's high fat, and arthritis. Okay. Sugar, the metabolic disruptor, hidden calories. The 12-ounce can of soda per day, 39 grams of sugar per can times 365 days in a year is 14,235 grams of sugar. That is 32 pounds of sugar a year. Just think about that. If you have one can of soda per day, that's 32 pounds of sugar. Sugary carbohydrates cause spikes in blood sugar. Complexity attenuates sugar metabolism rate. So when you have excessive insulin release in response to blood sugar, insulin resistant over time, excess sugar conversion to triglycerides in the liver, and triglycerides stored in adipose tissue, and increased systematic inflammation. So when you have excessive insulin release in response to blood sugar, you're going to have insulin resistance over time. And if you have insulin resistance, what happens is excess sugar converts into fat instead of being stored in your liver as glycogen or in your muscles as glycogen. It goes straight to the liver and stored as fat. And this is stored and increases your systematic inflammation. Glycemic response to carbohydrates. So you have your glycemic index, blood glucose raising potential of food, value of 100 is a reference of glucose. And you have like your glycemic response, impact of food or meal on blood glucose. And your glycemic load, glucose raising potential plus total carbohydrate content, or GL equals glycemic load times grams of carbohydrates divided by 100. So you have your high glycemic foods like cookies and donuts, and your lower glycemic foods like whole grains. What is shown here. So elevated insulin response and normal insulin response. This is a really good chart we can talk about Low glycemic foods would be foods that are under 55 on the glycemic index rating scale. Medium glycemic index foods would be 56 to 69, and high glycemic foods would be over 70. So we're going to talk first about some low glycemic foods. So all of your vegetables are going to be mostly, the ones that we're going to talk about right now are all going to be low glycemic. So you have asparagus, which is at 15, broccoli is at 15, you have celery at 15, cucumbers at 15, lettuce at 15, peppers at 15, spinach at 15, tomatoes at 15, chickpeas at 33, and cooked carrots a little bit higher at 39. You have rice bran is at 27, bran cereal is at 42, spaghetti is at 42, corn is at 54, okay, so that would be right under medium. We have grapefruit, which is low, it's at 25, apples a little bit higher at 38, peaches at a little higher at 42, but still in a low glycemic index. Orange is 44, grape 46. You have a banana at 54, which would be on the, you know, the higher end of the low. You have dairy, which is really low. Low-fat yogurt is 14, plain yogurt is 14, whole milk is 27, soy milk is 30, fat-free milk is 32, skim milk is 32, chocolate milk is 35, pretty low, probably due to the protein content, right? Fruit yogurt, 36. Obviously, ice cream would be too high, be 61. Proteins, peanuts, beans dried, 40. Peanuts are 21, lentils are 41, kidney beans are 41. Split peas are 45, lima beans are 46, and pinto beans would actually be on the medium level at 55. Black-eyed peas, those would be in the medium level at 59. Ice cream would be in the medium level at 61. You'll have mango at the medium level at 56, pineapple in the medium level at 66, sorry. And watermelon would actually be on the high end at 70, okay? You have bagels, which would be 103. That would be on the high end. Let's go back to the medium. We have wild rice. We're on the medium here at 57. Sweet potatoes would be in the medium at 61. White rice would be in the medium at 64. Couscous would be in the medium at 65. Whole wheat bread is actually on the high end at 71, okay? Muesli is at 80 high end. Baked potatoes, very high, 85. Oatmeal, very high, 87, high glycemic. And so maybe oatmeal isn't such a great idea for some people, okay? I'm not saying take oatmeal out, but it is a very high glycemic food. White bread, and you have your bagel. But I always have my oatmeal in the morning before my workouts. Processed carbohydrates, manufactured reduces biological integrity. Manufacturing of carbohydrates reduces biological integrity and nutritional value. So it takes the nutrients out when you process carbohydrates from, you know, whole grains to whole flour or whatever it is. You're taking out all the nutrients and you're just leaving basically nothing. Glycemic response like sugar increase risk from metabolic dysfunction and fat gain. High fructose corn syrup can impact blood lipids and inflammatory chemicals, and artificial ingredients can cause a number of health issues. So processed sugars, artificial ingredients can cause a number of health issues. Processed carbohydrates. So the effect of processed flours on blood sugar levels. You have cracked wheat, which is pretty low. Coarse flour, which is in the middle, and you have fine white flour, which goes all the way up to 120. Okay, so your blood sugar levels go all the way to 120. Remember, 100 is, I think that should say 100. I'm not sure why it says 189. That might be a mistake. But if it goes up past 100, you know it's a little bit too high. Okay, so blood sugar levels over the time of 120 minutes, if you look at cracked wheat, it goes up to 60 in about 40 minutes, and then by 120 minutes, it's almost back down to zero, okay? In the first 10 minutes, cracked wheat only goes up to 20, whereas in the first 10 minutes of fine white flour, that goes up to 30. In 60 minutes, In 20 minutes, fine white flour goes to 60. In 20 minutes, whole wheat goes to 40. In 40 minutes, fine white flour goes up to 120. 120 you'd get on your blood sugar level after 40 minutes of consuming white flour, whereas your blood sugar levels would be at 60 if you had eaten cracked wheat or whole wheat, something in the middle. But we're just really comparing fine wheat flour and wheat. And then over that 40 minutes, that's the peak of the cracked wheat, whereas that's not even the peak. It stays at 120 for 20 minutes from 40 to 60. And then it slowly goes down. So we see that processed flours have a high impact on blood sugars. So poor meal timing equals chaotic glucose dynamics. So you have, let's just pretend we have breakfast at 470 calories. You're getting hungry and you have hunger, the need, at 250 calories you need, but your appetite, if you keep waiting psychologically, is a perceived need of 1,000 calories. And so you eat 1,000 calories for lunch and you're not hungry for a while, and the same thing happens. You forget to eat, you get real hungry, and you eat a huge dinner, and then you have a snack, and your blood glucose levels are going all the way up, all the way down. Okay, so you want to try to minimize your appetite by reducing your hunger, and those are two different things. Okay, when you're hungry, you need to eat. When you have an appetite, you're past being hungry. So that's why it's important to keep your satiety low instead of super high, because you'll end up having poor meal timing, which will cause chaotic glucose dynamics. Inadequate carbohydrates. So low carbohydrate diets reduce performance and immune function. Loss of the protein sparing mechanism and catabolism, reduce fat use, ketoacidosis risk. Okay, so you have some risks associated with low carbohydrates. Carbohydrate availability affects more than energy output alone. It also affects metabolic biochemistry. When carbohydrate consumption is reduced through any of the following means, the body reacts to compensate for the deficit. Poor food selections, high protein diets, reducing energy intake, starvation or fasting, intentional carbohydrate restriction. Reduced glycogen reserves and low plasma glucose concentrations trigger glucose synthesis through a process called gluconeogenesis in the liver and, to a lesser extent, in the kidneys. The primary carbon skeletons used for gluconeogenesis derive from pyruvate, lactate, glycerol, and the amino acids aline and glutamine. These molecules are rearranged to form sugar to fuel the body's need. The gluconeogenic conversion steals substrates from the blood that have been liberated from lean mass, broken down proteins from muscle tissues, and fat mass to augment carbohydrate availability. Normally, the body has natural protein sparing mechanisms maintained by an adequate consumption of carbohydrates and calories, but restricting carbohydrate availability alters this typical state. Gluconeogenesis at the expense of bodily protein. Inadequate carbohydrate intake is detrimental to performance. You have sustained low glucose levels will result in protein sparing loss. Okay. Neurochemicals and hormones will shift, which will cause protein deamination, which will cause gluconeogenesis, which increases blood glucose, which has an effect on the brain. So these are all bad things. So you want to make sure that you have carbohydrates or gluconeogenesis will occur at the expense of bodily protein. Carbohydrate needs dictated by activity, intensity, and volume. The RDA, recommended daily amount, equals 55 to 60% is high for most individuals due to lack of activity. So more activity equals more carbohydrates. So high carbohydrate diet, initial muscle glycogen, and you have your time exhaustion limit. You have a low carbohydrate diet, normal carbohydrate diet, and high carbohydrate diet. So the more activity you perform, the more carbs you need. So up to 8 grams per kilogram of body weight, depending on how much you're working out, and as low as 4 to 5 grams per kilogram of body weight, depending on what you're moving. So sedentary, 3 to 4 grams of kilogram if you're not moving that much. If you are physically active, 4 to 5 kilograms. If you're moderately intense, 5 to 6 grams. And if you're vigorous, 6 to 8 grams. And if you're a competitive athlete, anywhere from 7 to 10 grams of carbs per kilogram. So let's just say you are 220 pounds or 100 kilograms and you're a competitive athlete. You multiply 7 grams times that 100, which would be 700 grams of carbohydrates. Multiply that by 4, okay? 7 times 400, okay? That would be 2,800. So 2,800 calories would be coming from carbohydrates, okay? So if you're a competitive athlete, you're 100 pounds, or you're 220 pounds, 100 kilograms times 7, that would be 700. Oh, wait, so 7 times 4, yep, 2,800 calories. So that's a lot of calories just coming out from carbohydrates. Now, depending on your kilogram, you want to measure and see where you line up. How many carbohydrates are you currently intaking? Are you doing 3 to 4 grams per kilogram? Are you sedentary? Are you not getting enough carbohydrates? That's something that you need to decide. So you can calculate your needs. You can first figure out your daily caloric intake requirement using your resting metabolic rate, and you multiply that by your activity level, and then you come up with this number, 2,744 calories. So the following example demonstrates the amount of carbohydrate needed for a 35-year-old male, 5'5 male weighing 75 kilograms who participates in regular moderate exercise most of the week. So it's 2,700 calories he's able to consume. Recommended carbohydrate 60%, 75 kilograms times 5.5, which is 412 grams. Multiply that by 4 calories, it's 1,648 calories from carbohydrates he needs per day. Okay, so that's how you would calculate your need. First, you'd have to do your Harris-Benedict equation and multiply that by your activity rate, and that's something that we'll be doing in the following chapter. So hopefully you learned a little bit about carbohydrates today. If you have any questions, just let me know. Thanks a lot.